Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is the 27th of the December in the year 2009. We are in the Loving Kindness Temple, New Hamlet, Plum Village. We have 4 more days before the new year starts. On the 24th, we learn the 5th mantra. And as a member of the Plum Village Sangha, you know how to practice the 1st, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th mantra. A mantra is a sentence that you pronounce, whether with sound or without sound. And that sentence will have an impact on you and the world right away. A mantra should be practiced with mindfulness, concentration, and insight. Otherwise, it is not a mantra. You should be very concentrated. You should be truly there, body and mind united, in order for the mantra to have an effect. When you perform, you are a priest, and you perform the Eucharist, you have to do very much the same. You hold the bread, and you pronounce the mantra. This bread is the body of Jesus. And the priest should be concentrated. His mind and body should be together. His mind should be truly there in the here and the now, in order to be in touch with himself, with the cosmos, with the piece of bread that he is holding in his hand. And he pronounced the mantra, "This bread is the body of Jesus Christ." He needs mindfulness, concentration, and insight in order to do that. And the congregation celebrating the Eucharist with him should do the same in order for the mantra to become a real mantra. And there will be communion, true communion, true life. If the priest is alive, and if the congregation is also alive, and then life is there, true life is there, Jesus is life, is there. And that is why we count very much on him, on her, the priest, to practice, in order for him or for her to be truly there, mind and body united. And we should, we in the congregation, we should support him or her in order for us to be truly there. We are truly present in the here and the now. And only with that the mantra could be a mantra and life become possible. Life become real. In the Buddhist tradition, we do not say that the piece of bread that you are holding is the body of Christ, but we say this piece of bread is the body of the cosmos. I think it's the same. Because if you look deeply into the piece of bread, you see the sunshine. Without sunshine, the wheat cannot grow. You see the cloud, that make the rain. You see the earth. You see time, space, everything of cosmos. And you need only 1 or 2 seconds of mindfulness in order to see that. It does not take a long time. With mindfulness, concentration, you can see in 1 second or two that the piece of bread that you are holding in your hand is the body of the cosmos. And when you break the bread, when you share the bread, you have brotherhood, sisterhood, you have love. And you are nourished by eating the piece of bread. So we use different words, different notions, but we do very much the same thing. Whether you perform the Eucharist, or whether you practice a mantra, you will do very much the same thing, provided that your mind and your body come together and you are truly established in the here and the now. You are truly there so that the cosmos could be there with you and true life. So the 5 mantras should be practiced in the spirit, body, speech and mind in perfect oneness, in order for the mantra that is pronounced become a power that can change ourselves and change the world. Although the words can be very simple, darling, I'm here for you. But that is a very deep mantra. You should have enough concentration, mindfulness and insight in order to realize that. A mantra is not a statement, it is a realization. What you realize is your true presence in the here and the now, and you feel you are fully alive, you are fully present. And if the mantra cannot produce that, it is less than a mantra. That is why the foundation of a mantra is the unification between body, speech, and mind. When the bell master invites the bell to sound, she has to do the same thing. She has to breathe in, breathe out, and produce her true presence before she touches the bell and invites the bell to sound. Otherwise, the bell has no, the sound of the bell has no value at all. And when we listen to the bell, we also produce the same kind of power. We produce the power of mindfulness of listening. I listen. I truly listen with all my whole body and mind. And I find that this beautiful sound brings me back to the here and the now, my true home. And if we breathe like that, we are nourished by the mystery of life. So although the words are simple, darling, I am here for you, but it is truly a mantra. If you invest your body, your mind, your concentration, your insight into that. Because to be there, alive, is a miracle. And we are touching that miracle. We are alive. We are there. The cosmos is there. The planet Earth is there. And that insight is produced by mindfulness and concentration. And every miracle can happen on that foundation. The second mantra is the same. Darling, I know you are there. You are a miracle, like myself. Darling, you are there alive. I am so grateful. I am so happy. that mindfulness, that insight, bring happiness. We don't have to go and look for happiness elsewhere, far away, and in the future. And with that energy of mindfulness, concentration, insight, and happiness, we embrace life. We cherish the moment that is given to us to live. The third mantra is, darling, I know you suffer. Suffering is part of life. But suffering can be a wonder also, because happiness and suffering inter are. If you don't know what is suffering, you don't know what is happiness. It's like the mud and the lotus. Without the mud, you cannot produce a lotus. So because of the presence of suffering, that happiness is possible. Because of the mud, the lotus is possible. And you are so grateful that happiness is still possible. And you feel that not only happiness is a wonder, but suffering is also a wonder. They inter are. And when you are aware of the pain, the sorrow the other person has in himself or herself, that will bring a relief. Your true presence is what can bring a relief. You are there for him, you are there for her when she suffers. And the fourth mantra you practice when you yourself suffer and you believe that your suffering has been caused by the person you trust the most, you love the most. The fifth is about bringing happiness in the here and the now. When you go back to the present moment, you have an opportunity to get the insight that there are so many wonders of life that are available in the here and the now, that there are so many conditions of happiness that are available to you in the here and the now, and you can be happy right here and right now. You are very lucky compared with other people, many other people. And you can pronounce that mantra either silently or audibly. This moment is a moment of happiness. You have enough physical conditions, mental conditions, in order to be happy in the here and the now. And we need you to be happy. In order for us to have a chance. If you are happy, if you can smile, if you can make a peaceful step and smile, that helps the world very much. And we count on you to practice the fifth mantra. A sangha is a group of people learning to live in such a way that mindfulness is possible in every moment of their life, and concentration and insight. What they produce in their daily life is the energy of mindfulness, concentration and insight, the foundation of brotherhood, sisterhood and happiness. Unfortunately, they don't sell that energy in the supermarket. So we have to produce them by ourselves, by our way of breathing, sitting, walking and doing things. We can do everything in mindfulness, generating the energy of mindfulness concentration in order for us to dwell in the here and the now and touching the wonders of life for our transformation, healing and nourishment. And the community of practice is a firm, is a place that produce this kind of energy. And the world needs that kind of energy very much. And when we live together and we practice together, the collective energy of mindfulness, concentration and insight will be powerful. And those who come with to us, they will inherit, they will profit from that energy, and we will share that energy with the world. And that is why Sangha building is a very noble task. The Buddha is an excellent Sangha builder. And if we consider ourselves to be a friend of the Buddha, a young brother or sister of the Buddha, a disciple of his, and then we should follow his example. We should try to build a Sangha wherever we are. We begin with ourselves, and we look around, and we recognize other elements of our Sangha. A beautiful path that you can use to do walking meditation is also an element of your Sangha. A small bell that you may use to practice mindful breathing is a part of your Sangha. Even the cat in the house can be part of the Sangha. Our friends can come and have a cup of tea with us on the weekend, sitting quietly for a few moments and drink tea with us in mindfulness. They are part of our Sanghas. A Sangha is a place where we can generate the energy of mindfulness. Mindfulness of sitting, mindfulness of walking, mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of eating. And mindfulness brings insight and concentration and happiness. Happiness is something we invent, we create with our practice. Happiness is a matter of your mind. With your mind, you can create either hell or paradise, either pain or happiness. And the Sangha that you try to build is a refuge. Because with a Sangha, you can maintain your practice alive. You can keep your practice alive. We know that in a retreat, we profit a lot from the Sangha, and how easy, how wonderful to practice with the Sangha. We can generate very easily the energy of mindfulness, concentration and insight while sitting and walking and chanting. But when we go home alone, we find it more difficult because the environment is not very conducive to mindfulness, concentration and insight, and we cannot keep our practice. And that is why we have to learn how to build a Sangha wherever we are. When you are in the process of Sangha building, you feel yourself as a true continuation of the Buddha, because the Sangha is a refuge. And your Sangha will be a true Sangha, not just a group of people talking about Buddhism. Your Sangha is made of members that know how to breathe mindfully, how to smile mindfully, how to produce the energy of mindfulness, concentration, the insight. Your Sangha is made of people who can be smiling, happy, who are capable of building, creating brotherhood, sisterhood. And when they come and touch and get in touch with Sangha, they know this is a true Sangha. How can we say that this Sangha is a true Sangha? Because you feel that the Dharma is there. By practicing the Dharma, people become a true Sangha. The Dharma is the practice of mindfulness, of breathing, sitting, and so on. So with the practice of the Dharma, the Sangha becomes a true Sangha. And the Dharma is not the spoken Dharma or the written Dharma, but the living Dharma. The living Dharma is generated when one is breathing mindfully, walking mindfully, smiling mindfully, speaking mindfully, and so on. So what makes the Sangha, a real Sangha, is the living Dharma. And in the Sangha, we try always to keep the living Buddha present, or the living Dharma present. And we can judge, we can look at the Sangha, and we can estimate, you can see the value of the Sangha by the practice of member of the Sangha. You look at the people walking and you know how mindful, how happy they are. It's very easy. Just take 1 or 2 minutes and look and you see. You look at the people sitting and you can see that they are sitting happily. They are trying to do their time in order for the sitting time to be over. When we practice with intelligence, the Dharma, the practice become pleasant, nourishing, healing. And you can see, you can recognize a happy Sangha. You can feel the spirit of brotherhood, sisterhood. You can feel the harmony, the smile. And you know that they do have the living Dharma with them. And wherever there is the living Dharma, there is the Buddha. Because the Buddha is made of the Dharma. Without the Dharma inside, a Buddha would not be a Buddha. So a Buddha is someone that is made of mindfulness, concentration, insight, the practice, the living Dharma. And if the Sangha has the true Dharma within her, the Sangha is a Buddha. And we can learn to recognize the Buddha in the form of a Sangha also. The Buddha is not in the sky, in a cloud. The Buddha should be looked in the here and the now, among living beings, human beings. The safest place to look for a Buddha is in the human being, in yourself. Because you have the seed of mindfulness, concentration, and insight in you. And your co-practitioners also have the same thing. So Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are not abstract ideas. They are the things that you can touch. You can listen to. And each of us has the three jewels in us. And in our tradition, we call it the three bodies. You have your physical body, but that is not the only body you have. Fortunately, you have the Buddha body in you. The presence of the seed of understanding and compassion in you is the living Buddha in you. you are capable of understanding and of being compassionate. That possibility to understand and to love is in you. You have that potential. Sometimes we call it Buddha nature, or the baby Buddha. And therefore you have a Buddha kaya in you, means a Buddha body in you. And you have to allow that baby Buddha to grow. For the sake of your freedom and your happiness. As the Buddha grows, your freedom grows, your happiness grows. And that is why you have to take care of the Buddha body in you. Allow the Buddha body in you to grow. The growth of the Buddha body in us is crucial for our liberation, our happiness. So we can talk to our Buddha body. Hello there, I know you are there, my Buddha body. I will do my best in order to give you a chance to grow. And how can we nourish the Buddha body in us? By practicing the Dharma. We learn how to breathe mindfully, to come home to the here and the now. We learn how to walk mindfully so that each step can be healing and nourishing. And that is the living Dharma. We nourish the Buddha body with the living Dharma. And in the Sangha, everyone is trying to do the same thing. Everyone is trying to nourish the Buddha in himself or herself with the practice of the Dharma. What else could we use in order to nourish the Buddha body in us? The practice of the Dharma. So everyone of us has the Dharma body in us. The Dharma kaya. So the Dharma kaya, the Dharma body in us is not something abstract. It is our practice. Your practice may be still weak, so the Dharma body is weak. But it is possible to strengthen your practice. And wherever you go, you bring your practice with you. And if it happens that you find yourself in a difficult situation, it is your practice that will rescue you and help you out of that difficult situation. Wherever you go, bring your practice, bring your Dharma kaya, Dharma body. And when we come to the Sangha and practice, we learn how to master the practice, improve the quality of our practice, we nourish our Dharma body. And if we know that the Dharma body is becoming more solid, we know that the Buddha body is growing. And because we know that Sangha is the best kind of environment where we can consolidate our practice. That is why every one of us need a Sangha body. And this is your Sangha body, your community of practice. The community of practice, which is a living Sangha, a true Sangha, is a place where you can be protected, where you can get your strength, your protection, your support, in order to go on with your practice. And every one of us need a Sangha body, including the Buddha. The Buddha felt that he needs a Sangha. Without a Sangha, the Buddha cannot achieve what he wants to achieve. And that is why after enlightenment, the first thing he thought of is to go and find out the first elements of his Sangha. He went to the deer park and looked for his co-practitioners. And his first Sangha consisted of five friends and himself, six people. And the original Sangha was initiated with that walk from by the Buddha from the Bodhi tree to the deer park. And we are now the continuation of that original Sangha. The Buddha Sangha is now a little bit everywhere in Africa, in Asia, in Australia, in France. And when we are able to touch the Sangha, we touch the Dharma and we touch the Buddha. The Buddha is available because the Sangha is there. And that is why every one of us has a Buddha, has a Sangha body. We cannot be without a Sangha body. And we have to help consolidate that Sangha body. And wherever we go, we bring that Sangha with us in our heart. You know, in 1965-66, I left Vietnam to call for peace. I left early in the month of May, and after having called for peace, I was not allowed to go home, and my Sangha was in Vietnam. My Sangha body was in Vietnam. I found myself in exile. I knew right away that if I want to survive as a practitioner, I have to begin building a Sangha here in the West. Because if you are without your Sangha, you'll be like a bee cut off from your beehive, and you will dry up in a few days. So I was like a cell in the Sangha body, taken out, and if I did not try to practice and to be a Sangha, I will be dry up like a bee without a behind. So while contacting friends in the circles of church communities and learning communities, I got in touch with people and organized the practice. We organized sitting meditation at the Quaker Center in Paris. We organized a sitting meditation session at our office, the Vietnamese Buddhist Peace Delegation in Paris. And in order to survive as practitioners, we know that we have to build a Sangha. And that is initial Sangha has grown into a large Sangha now. And all my friends who are sitting today are part of the Sangha. So Sangha building has been my practice, my aspiration for a long time, since I was a young monk. And I know that Sangha building is a very important practice. So I always urge my friends, if they want to continue with the practice, strengthen the practice, if they want to serve the world, they have to undertake the work of Sangha building. You are a friend of Thầy, you are a friend of the Buddha, a brother of the Buddha, a sister of the Buddha, an authentic one, if you are a Sangha builder. And everyone of us needs a Sangha. The Buddha needed a Sangha, Thầy needs a Sangha, and you need a Sangha. We cannot be without a Sangha body. That is why a true practitioner always realizes that she has three bodies: the Buddha body, the Dharma body, and the Sangha body. And the Sangha body is a very wonderful environment in order to nourish the Dharma body and the Buddha body. So if we have some time today, in the afternoon, we might like to discuss, to share our experiences about the Sangha building. We truly need to help the Buddha in order to build a Sangha wherever we are. And the best way to build a Sangha is with our practice. Of course, building Sangha, you need a computer, a telephone, but these are not the most essential things. The most essential thing is our willingness to practice. When you want to build a Sangha, you know that harmony, brotherhood, is the kind of substance that can really make the quality of a Sangha. That is why you practice the practice of loving speech and deep listening. And when you practice listening deeply and with compassion, you can help relieve a lot of suffering of the people you talk to. And they will be listening to you, your desire to build a Sangha. And they will become members of your Sangha. We don't build a Sangha in order to become the leader of the Sangha. We build a Sangha in order to take refuge in it. And that is why we allow every member of the Sangha to contribute the talent, the capacity. And to be able to listen to others is a great talent. To be able to use loving speech in order to communicate, that is a great talent. And therefore, Sangha builders have to practice deep listening, loving speech. And when we are able to build a group of people who is happy, that is happy, that can generate brotherhood, sisterhood, happiness, we will profit from that group, the Sangha. And many people will be able to take refuge in that group. The Sangha is the hope of the Buddha. Because with the Sangha, the Dharma will be available. The Buddha is also available. And what you want to offer the world is no less than the three jewels. You have the three jewels in your heart. And your happiness is made of the three jewels. And you want to share the three jewels with the world. And the way is to build a Sangha. The five mindfulness trainings is a very concrete expression of true love, true happiness. It is and they are representing the three jewels, the Buddha, the true Buddha, the true Dharma, and the true Sangha. And when we practice the five mindfulness trainings, we get the freedom and the happiness that we deserve. It is by practicing the five mindfulness trainings that we can build our freedom. Freedom from affections. First of all, the afflictions of wrong thinking. When we do not practice right thinking, we suffer and we make other people suffer. Right thinking is thinking in the line of understanding and compassion. Our thinking should be characterized by the spirit of non-discrimination, non-dualism. Because if we continue to think in terms of discrimination, dualism, we create division and suffering. And from that, there will be anger, violence, destruction, and war. So our practice is the practice of right thinking, thinking in such a way that can include everyone. And we get insight that our happiness has to do with the happiness of the other person, the other people. And with that, there will be no discrimination anymore, no dualistic thinking anymore. And when we practice the first mindfulness training about preserving, protecting life, we know that the practice of right thinking is at the foundation. We should think in such a way that we can embrace everyone. We will not eliminate anyone. Learn to accept. And that is the basic purpose for peace. And what we say, what we do, will reflect our true, our right thinking. Namely, understanding and compassion. We can only protect life with that kind of practice. Non-discrimination. And we can eliminate the tendency to be dogmatic. We can eliminate intolerance. We are no longer caught in a view. We no longer want to eliminate those who have other views. And because we are free from views, we are capable of listening, understanding, and help people to free themselves from their views. And therefore, mutual understanding become possible, and there will be no fear, no anger, no violence, and no war. When we practice the first mindfulness training, protecting life, we know that the practice of right thinking, the practice of right speech is very important. The practice of deep listening, compassionate listening, is very important. So the first mindfulness training about protecting life has to do with the fourth mindfulness training, which is about deep listening and loving speech. You cannot practice the first training unless you know how to practice the fourth training. The fourth training is learn how to listen, how to use loving speech, how to tell the truth. We should tell the truth in such a way that help the other person to receive the truth. And therefore, loving speech is very important. And if we practice deeply, we will find out that the fifth mindfulness training about mindful consumption is very crucial in order to succeed in the practice of the first training. We can practice consuming in such a way that we can reduce the suffering of living beings. Preserve our planet and reverse the tendency of global warming. And therefore, the fifth mindfulness training on mindful consumption is crucial for the success of the first training, protecting life. When we study and practice the third training about true love, we know wrong sexual behavior can destroy millions of lives. And the suffering caused by sexual misconduct is enormous. The suffering caused by HIV is due to the lack of mindfulness. It needs only a few minutes in order to bring death into us. And millions of people die because of that. Sexual desire, we have to look deeply into it. We have to practice the third training in order to protect us, protect our children, protect our society. We have to practice together the third training. And that is also the practice of protecting life. So when we study in depth the five trainings, we know that the practice of one mindfulness training include the other four. They inter-are. And that is why while building a Sangha, we are aware that the practice of the five trainings is at the foundation of the Sangha life. And if the Sangha practice deeply the five trainings, it will be a happy Sangha. That's something we can be sure of. A family that practices according to the five trainings will be a harmonious and happy family. A Sangha where every member practices the five trainings, there will be brotherhood, sisterhood, harmony, and happiness. And therefore, we can define the Sangha as a community that practices according to the five trainings, the living Dharma, in order to make the Buddha available to everyone. And we know that now we have a new version of the five trainings. The fruit of our practice for more than 8 months, we have helped the Buddha to formulate the five trainings in such a way that that they can reflect the deepest teaching of the Buddha. And that is considered to be something like a Buddhist vision for a global spirituality, the Buddhist vision of a global ethic. And while practicing the five canons, we can share our practice, our insight with other people, and urge them to go back to their traditions and find out the equivalent in their traditions. On the New Year Eve, we shall be celebrating practicing as a Sangha, and each of us will offer an aspiration on a piece of paper. That is our meditation for the New Year. And I think we have a few days in order to reflect on this, on how to nourish the Buddha body in us, how to nourish the Dharma body in us, and how to help build this Sangha with the practice of five mindfulness trainings. That's what we need to do in order to help preserve our planet and reduce the violence and the despair that is overwhelming the world. We practice as a community, as a Sangha. So please, now until the end of the year, practicing like a Sangha, we should look deeply into these matters. How can we should use our intelligence in order to reorganize our life. Reorganize our daily life in such a way that every minute of our life can be a chance to nourish the Buddha body, to allow the Dharma body to be consolidated and to have a deeper connection with the Sangha, and how to really put into practice the Buddhist vision for a happy, a global community, happiness of a global community. And the collective energy of the practice will nourish us, and happiness is something that we experience during the time of practice. The Dharma is lovely in the beginning, in the middle, and the end.